Thank you for checking out Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. It really means a lot to me that you're listening to this podcast. If you listen and you like the content, then make sure you subscribe, make sure you leave a review. Please do that. And also go check me out on some of my other platforms. I have a long-running YouTube channel. I've got a blog, theclinicaltrialsguru.com. If you're interested in becoming a CRA or you're interested in getting a career in this industry, go to thecraacademy.com. If you're a research site owner interested in getting more studies for your site or negotiating better contracts for your site, go to my blog, theclinicaltrialsguru.com, and check it out. I offer consulting services. If you're a pharma, biotech, life sciences company, a CRO, I own a startup CRO, and we're here to help you, whatever it is you want. If you're a CRO, we can white label a lot of services for you. We have CRA coverage across the country at cost. We can do this at scale. If you're a pharma company, we are a full service CRO, and we're very confident in our pricing, and we are extremely competitive at bidding. And if you're also interested in your own digital marketing and leveraging a podcast maybe for yourself, reach out to me, dan@theclinicaltrialsguru.com. Again, thank you very much and enjoy the show. Welcome to episode 162. Yes, 162 of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. This will go on YouTube as well. This will be an interesting podcast. I have a grab bag of questions.
A grab bag?
Grab bag.
On your phone?
Yes. But the first one, it's a 2018 digital grab bag. The first theme we want to talk about is...
So you're looking at pictures?
Yeah, I have screenshots.
Okay.
The difference between owning a site and a CRO. So go, Chris. All you.
The difference between owning a site and a CRO? That's
true. We have so many people that don't own...
truly a question?
Yes. Yeah. We have so many people that think it's sexier to own a CRO. So these are people that don't own anything. They may not even be in the industry at all, but they just hear things.
I don't think they're in the industry.
I mean, they're not.
A common question is, what's the difference between a site and an SMO?
No.
That's a little more in line, though. A site and a CRO are two completely different things.
Here's the question. I had the opportunity of blah, blah, blah. Well, let's keep this one confidential.
Sure. Always.
I would like to know, how difficult is it to open a CRO if you're not financially equipped to get it started? And how is this different from owning a site, opening a site?
So maybe they don't mean what's the difference between a site and a CRO. More,
what's a better business model, I guess, is the
question. Yeah, and what are the costs associated with both?
Yes.
That really reads, to me, more how the question reads.
So what is your take on this?
Well, it's an interesting question. So,
For me, it's a no-brainer. What's easier and what's better?
I was just thinking from a cost standpoint, it actually might be cheaper to start a CRO.
Yeah, you don't need anything.
Right.
You need an email address, a website, and somebody.
Yeah, yourself.
Yeah. Right? Very interesting angle.
Yeah.
That we're taking on episode 162.
That's what I was saying. Interesting question.
Okay.
So if costs are a concern and you're well versed in the business, CRO could be the better avenue to pursue.
Expand.
Well, just again, because the costs, right? Costs associated with it. I mean, the site, you're looking at, you need to employ, if you're not going to be the coordinator, you have to employ one. Some investigators, right? You have to have a PI, can't get a study without one.
Okay.
Some principal investigators will not agree to a percentage, so you got to pay them an hourly rate, right? For whatever work they do. So costs associated there.
Interesting. I'm glad we did this topic.
Then on top of that, you have to have a location, right? Can't do it out of your garage or your house anymore.
But with a CRO...
You can do it out of the garage of your house.
It could be all virtual.
It could be out of the garage of your house, unlike a site, right? So
right.
You don't have costs associated with the site, right? Having rent and internet.
So startup costs way lower as a CRO.
Can be, right?
can be if you do you possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It, you could have actually zero costs associated with starting a CRO. Absolutely zero.
Can the same be said for a site?
No, I don't think so.
Let's think about that.
So, at the very minimum, starting a site, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there are some costs with a CRO as well, but they're minimal, just like I was going to mention with the site. These costs are...
You have no insurance.
Right, you've got to have some insurance. You have to establish your business name, get a business license, right?
Mm-hmm.
What I mean by established business name is get a company. Establish a company, right? LLC,
yeah.
LLC, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So there's costs associated with that, but they're both minimal. But... with the CRO, I think your costs end there. With the site, again, I mean, you're going to have to, you may have to pay the PI, you may have to pay a coordinator, you will certainly have to have a location. But if you do, if you get lucky and get the best possible scenario at a site as well, the costs aren't outlandish, but I think they are more than a CRO. Because at the site, if you partner with a PI who's willing to accept a percentage and you're utilizing their office space, then there's no cost associated, right, with those things. They're already paid for by the doctor, right? You're using his site. He's willing to accept a percentage of the budget. You may have to buy some equipment, though, that the site doesn't already have. So there would be some costs there, but they're minimal as well.
Yeah, it's not like it costs a lot to open a site either.
In the best case scenario.
Right. Which is where we direct most of our clients when they're new.
Not always possible.
Right.
Right? Because again, you may have a PAI that has to get paid hourly or a salary, and you have to rent a location. You have to rent an office space.
Right.
So definite costs associated with that.
What are the hard costs of a CRO? There's really nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think there is.
Because what is a CRO, really? I mean, if we break it down to its least common denominator, what is it? First of all, it's not necessary.
Right? If the sponsor
you don't need a CRO.
If the sponsor, yeah, sure, they can do it themselves.
Which they're starting to.
Right.
Right?
So it's just somebody who's going to be the oversight, essentially.
Not even that. The sponsor has to be the oversight.
Well, yeah, the FDA put it back on them, true.
Yeah,
but
so what do they do really?
It's kind of like the same relationship with a PI and somebody and the PI delegating tasks, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of the same relationship now.
It's like a site owner and then a PI and a sponsor.
Exactly.
Right. You're
so sponsor in the CRO.
In a perfect world, the sponsor would love to just hire the PI and then do the studies with them.
Yeah.
They don't want a site. They don't want a CRO.
Correct.
But they realize it's the real world, and that's how these things actually get done.
Right.
But a CRO is really not needed.
No. If a sponsor is willing to take on all of the tasks on their own, which many are not. But like you said, I think more are ramping up so they can do so.
So cost is easier. Barrier to entry is much lower to be a CRO.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing.
Minimal.
But very then normal. How do you stand at the hardest part becomes
getting the business.
How do you get the projects? Because right. As a site,
the business.
And by the way, as a site, it's not easy to get studies when
much
you're a new
easier.
Site.
Much easier.
Yeah, but it's not easy.
Of course.
We talk
not.
About it all the time.
Sure,
here.
But much easier than getting a project as a CRO.
I would say a magnitude of 10 times easier.
Oh, maybe even more than that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Now on the flip side, you have the profit margins. If you run a site properly the way we instruct in our Site Owner Academy, which,
no.
Shameless plug, is our best product.
Sure, but in your opinion.
In my opinion.
But before we get into that, we still don't have a ton of data on CRO work, right?
We've done it for a year now.
Right, and we've had, two or three projects.
But this year we're about to get two more.
Right, but still, we have limited data, comparatively speaking to site
data. Okay, we have two projects that we actually won, and two more we're probably going to get soon. But how many? We've bid for a lot more, and we know the process of trying to get studies fairly well now.
Sure.
And we've had conversations.
From both angles, we know about trying to get projects, right?
Yes.
Site level and CRO level.
And at the site level, we know for over a decade.
Right.
Going on two now. So, much easier, in my opinion, to have a site.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone can go open up a CRO. I mean, you can do it in one day.
Now, when you say anyone, you would that's assuming they have experience in the industry. You can't be Joe...
No, this is a person with no experience.
So Joe Smith walking down the street, he was an auto mechanic yesterday, can go start a CRO tomorrow.
Yeah, he can.
He won't be successful.
Right.
I mean...
Right, but you can.
Sure, you can, but you won't be successful.
Correct. Most likely you will not be.
No, I don't even think there's a most likely.
So is it important if somebody wants... First of all, I don't know why anyone would want to open a CRO. The reason we're doing it is to work our way into equity deals with sponsors.
Right.
If we can bypass the whole CRO thing, I would do it in a heartbeat.
Sure.
Although I think it serves a dual purpose now with our CRA Academy. So it gives some of our interns some work. Gives the interns work. And that's another shameless plug, CRA Academy.
Yeah, and it also gives our consulting, you know, once we are selecting sites, potential work as well.
So multiple birds with one stone. But if it's just, if I was just looking to maximize profits, CRO maybe sounds sexy and appealing initially, but you're not going to be Quintiles, and you're not going to be Par Excel. And your margins are, I mean, we've done these proposals now, these bids. The margins are not there when you compare it to a site margin.
Yes, that was just what I was going to say. Compare it to a site, yes, yeah, I would agree. I mean, the margins are much better than, say, owning a restaurant.
And your chances of success are probably better than owning a restaurant.
Given that you have experience in the industry, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, starting any number of other a number of other industries, you know, grocery store or whatnot. But yeah, I mean, compared to a site, the margins are definitely not there. I completely agree. Mm-hmm.
Now, is it, if somebody wants to, you know, let's say they're listening and they're saying, hey, you know, that's great, but I still want to own a CRO. Should I go the site route first? If I have no experience. Site route first.
Oh, absolutely.
I would recommend that to you.
Absolutely. You need to be able to speak the lingo to sell yourself to a sponsor, and that's the best way to learn.
Now, what if it's a CRA and they're deciding, because I don't know what this person is, but...
Sure, I can see CRAs doing it.
CRA wants to do a CRO instead of a site.
Yeah, I can see that.
And is that you give them the Chris Sauber seal of approval for that?
Depending on what they know, but assuming most CRAs I've met, I would say probably could do it.
And the most challenging aspect of running a CRO?
Getting the project.
But it seems like once you have a project with a sponsor, they'll give you plenty of work.
Oh, yeah.
So then the challenging aspect becomes making a profit.
Sure.
And not running yourself into the ground.
Sure.
Yeah. Which you can very easily do.
Sure. You'd have to hire some people. And
if you're a CRA trying to escape traveling and you want to open a CRO thinking that's a way to do it, well, yeah, you can hire a CRA, but then where's your all your profits are going there?
Well, they're not profits, they're costs. But
pass-through costs, and what you'll keep is the TMF and, you know, whatever overhead you can negotiate, which is starting to get squeezed out.
Sure.
But sponsors realize they don't need these CROs.
Depends on, because we've talked to a number of different people, and some say you charge 3 times your cost, right? That's your profit.
Ridiculous.
Which we've found doesn't seem to be likely that you'll get that.
But you'd maybe be lucky to get your cost plus 20%.
I would say 30, but...
As a site...
No, I'm saying as a CRO.
Yes, now as a site, you can get 80% profit margin.
You can, sure.
And it's much easier work.
I don't know about 80% profit margins, but... I mean, because if you're paying a PIC 20% of the budget, you're down to 80. And you have some other small costs associated with that, probably 70%. Assuming, again, you're under the best case scenario, in which you're utilizing the doctor's office space, right?
Yeah.
Your PI's office space. Your costs exponentially go up if you're paying for office space and all associated costs with that. Then you're probably down to 50%. Still better than a CRO, though.
Okay.
If you're paying PI, site costs, and a coordinator, you're probably down to 50%.
Got another question now. Next topic, shift gears. But same train of thought. Types of clinical trial designs, which we're just starting to dabble with. Can you define with examples a clinical trial of high, moderate, and minimal complexity? Asked by a very friendly viewer.
The examples?
What makes a trial complex?
Sure.
What makes it medium?
Well, let's start it easy.
Yeah, start with easy.
So easy would, in my opinion, be like an observational study, right? Like a phase four observational study. That's probably about as easy as it's going to get.
And first of all, what I wish I could ask this person is, what do you mean by easy for who? Complex for who? For the sponsor? For the site?
For easy, I think it's the same for everybody, easy, right? So you're doing a phase four observational study. Mm. I think that's easy for everybody. That's because, again, it's phase four, so there's very little, if any, FDA oversight involved, unless mm-hmm. it's mandated by the FDA. So if it's more of a marketing study, right, then FDA oversight's laxed on that,
okay.
as it probably should be. Right?
Okay.
It's already approved. That's, again, if there's no safety concerns that they're having the sponsor take a look at. So simple for the site, it's simple for a CRO if there's one involved, and it's simple for the sponsor. It's already approved. Again, little, if any, oversight from the FDA. So that's probably the easiest study,
okay.
right? For everybody. Phase four, even if it has some safety concerns, it's still probably, that's about as easy as it gets, is a phase four trial.
Okay,
so... say phase four for a type 2 diabetes drug, right? Which they're just trying to get the doctors used to prescribing. I mean, you're looking at their blood glucose levels. That's about it, right? And the assessments can be anything, right? It could be one assessment for that study. How does the patient feel at their visit, right? So patient comes in as part of the regular checkup. Doctor, just for the study, asks, you know, do you feel any better on this medication?
Yeah, and I think this person's asking more about the design of the study, but still, for who? Like, if it's for the patient, if it's for the site, if it's for the sponsor. So I'm going to assume it's for the sponsor and the CRO and the site. Now, in my opinion, the more complex... a study gets more complex as you start adding more places where deviations can occur.
Well, and also the phase, right? Most likely. Because if you're doing a phase one study, right, with many moving parts, right, you have a patient, most likely it's inpatient.
Mm-hmm.
You have lots of PK sampling. You may have...
those have to be drawn at the minute.
Right.
The window are minutes, not days, like in a outpatient study.
Sure, and then sometimes they want to see, because the sponsor's running it on limited funds, so they do a phase 1/2 where they want to see some efficacy results to see if it's even worth pursuing into phase two.
Yeah.
So then you're doing assessments too,
mm-hmm.
right? So yeah, that can get rather difficult, right?
Yeah. I think to keep it simple, it's where you can... the studies where you can have more potential deviations are complex.
Sure. When there's more parts, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if it's like a phase three study where you're just doing assessments for the most part, right? It can be involved because there can be a lot of assessments, but there aren't many different parts. Whereas a phase 1/2... there are going to be a lot of different moving parts there. Like you said, the PK, and then you have the assessments too.
Mm-hmm.
So there's two very important things.
There's also inclusion-exclusion criteria that could be complex.
Sure.
Right? Versus sure. restrictive. There also could be multiple treatment arms that can change based on certain assessments.
Sure.
I mean, that's, in my opinion, the easy way to this from a site perspective. And when you're designing it as a sponsor, you want to keep the site in mind and obviously the patients in mind. But for the patients, it's not really... complexity is not necessarily the issue, although if they have to have tons of blood draws and come in
mm-hmm.
with very tight window intervals, then it could be complex for them as well.
Also, if you put off a lot of work onto them as well. You know, you have a lot of diary entries and...
yeah, those patient-reported outcome assessments are horrible for these patients.
Yeah.
Right? And we've had many a time where the patients were excluded from a study based on them not answering questions in the diary, even though they qualify for the study.
Right, outside of they missed a day of entry.
So that makes it complex for the patients too. So that's a tough one. But in my opinion, try to keep it as simple as possible for the patients. Keep them in mind.
Mm-hmm.
The sites, don't give them opportunity for deviations. That's how you know if a protocol is written well or not, is how do you prevent deviations from the study design.
Sure, but a lot of this can be mandated by the FDA, so you have to make it complex.
Yeah.
There's no way around it.
Yeah.
So.
In that case, there's not much you can do.
Mandate's the wrong word, but you've been advised by the FDA to include certain data sets that make it difficult.
Mm-hmm. Another question. How do you prioritize data entry in a very busy clinic? As a research assistant...
Wait, read that over. I'm sorry.
How do you prioritize data entry in a very busy clinic?
Okay.
I am a research assistant added to studies with many enrolled patients and they're missing data in ECRFs. Sometimes I feel lost in what to do first. Clear queries, update visits, prioritize adverse events. This is a site that's just behind on everything.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
So what does this person do?
Okay, so what is... This is... would be my rationale. I've been out of the coordinating aspect for quite a while, so I don't recall, maybe you remember, but what does a sponsor typically prioritize? Getting queries answered or having new data entered?
Depends on where they are in the study. If it's a database lock, they want queries answered.
Well, that's not true. They'd want everything entered, right? If there was a visit
not
2 weeks
not
ago.
Not if the monitors haven't SDV'd the visits that you haven't entered yet.
Okay. So
queries. Doesn't affect the database lock.
Because the contract...
It depends. It depends on where in the study you are. Like, what does the sponsor want at that time? And if you have numerous studies, well, which study is most pissed off with you? Seriously. Which sponsor and monitor is most fed up with you? That's the way I prioritized.
Yeah,
this monitor is making the most noise. I'm going to answer her stuff first.
Okay, but...
And then everyone else. And then when I get caught up, I'm not going to get behind.
Okay, but let's think about this for one moment. So let's say you've got a sponsor so pissed off, you know they're never coming back to you with a study.
Right.
So they might just all of a sudden gone down, way down on their priority list, right? Because what's the point? Let's try and keep these other sponsors happy.
Yep. You are correct.
So...
It maybe, all depends.
I guess the answer to this person, who I assume is a coordinator and not an owner.
It's a good question, though.
Who's a coordinator and not an owner?
Is it not a good question?
Sure. But I would probably ask whoever owns the site or the PI, hey, I can't do all of this. How do you want me to prioritize
this? As a site owner, what you should do is update visits first. Because that triggers how you get paid.
I'm sure.
Queries can wait, but if... Like, if there's a database lock and you're going to have angry CRAs, and they're keeping metrics on all this stuff, by the way, how quickly do you enter data? How quickly do you answer queries?
To me,
how do you prioritize AEs? They're tracking all of it, so you're screwed no matter what you do. You just need to get it all done. Stop listening, stop watching to this podcast, and go get it done right now.
To me, it sounds like she, the coordinator here, needs to have a conversation with the site owner and say, we need to get another body in here to enter data, right? Because you could hire somebody that's still in high school. Like, it'd be a sophomore in high school. Let's get somebody in here for minimum wage even.
Okay, and but enter you have data. That conversation. Okay.
Enter data, and then that allows you as the coordinator to answer queries. You got one individual entering data, coordinator can handle the queries. That kind of hopefully will solve your dilemma. Another body.
Yeah, but okay, that's great, but these things need to get done now.
Yeah, then get another body now. You got a younger sister or brother?
This minute.
Well, yeah, that's not going to happen this minute.
Enter the new visits first, in my opinion. I'm a site owner.
Sure.
Enter the new visits. Even just put the date. Some studies that triggers a payment. Okay? You'll leave a place marker for when you go need to fill out the rest of the data. Answer queries.
Okay, let's take an assumption here for a moment.
Yeah.
Because I understand, and I think the audience understands, you're thinking of from a level of, let's get money rolling in.
Yes.
What if money's not a concern?
When is it?
No, let's say it's not a concern. Let's say you're a very busy site. It's not a concern. We're not worried about a few triggered payments.
Queries? I think so. Followed by probably
data. You're worried about long-term.
Yeah,
right, with your sponsors and getting repeat business.
Queries, then enter new data, and then AEs. Now, if it's SAE, you should enter that first.
No, all right.
But they don't really rely on the EDC for SAEs. They have forms that you send in.
Right. So.
That's my opinion.
Okay.
Get another question. Can you expand with some examples on how to be a good patient recruiter? If you have no experience, one of the strategies I always tell people to do is if you want to work at a clinic, intern, go as a patient recruiter. And then get good at recruiting patients.
Sure.
So how do you do that with examples?
How do you position yourself so a clinic would want to hire you as a recruiter?
Like, how do you actually recruit patients?
Oh.
And how do you position yourself?
So getting patients is pretty easy because as a site owner and site director at times, I've had people come in and say, are you hiring for anything? And I'll tell them, sure, we need patients. You want to recruit for patients?
And how many take you up on that?
Everybody that walks in the door and nobody's delivered anything.
Exactly.
Right? But guess what?
But they all say, yes, that's great.
Sure. But they would catch my attention if they did deliver.
Yes.
Right?
So if and I now if they deliver, like, let's say, 3 patients and they say, hey, you know, Chris, I actually want to be a research assistant. Even if it's for free, I'll keep recruiting.
Right, yeah.
But I want to learn some of the other stuff
too. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah?
Yeah.
See, I tell everybody to do this.
Sure.
But it's very hard. Yeah. So how do they recruit the patients?
So
what can they do, the ones that say yes? They're obviously, if they all say yes and none of them come through, it's difficult.
So let's cap off the first part of that, right? So go into your local research clinic, right?
Yeah.
Speak to the office man, whoever's running the site director for research there, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're all set up differently. So speak to somebody in charge of research.
Okay.
Probably not the BI. And tell them you would like to recruit for a study, any study for them, and you'll accept payment upon delivery. You're not getting paid.
Yeah.
You're not getting paid an hourly rate or anything. You're getting paid upon delivery of a patient that enrolls.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's no risk from the site here.
Right.
Okay. That's how you position yourself.
Yes.
Like I said, I've taken up many people on this.
So, right. And no one's delivered. So why?
Right. Because they obviously, I believe, they're fairly lazy.
Okay. So how does one, let's say they're not lazy, go get patients for a clinic?
Okay. So let's say you're legitimately interested and you want to do this, you want to prove yourself. You're going to need a copy of the inclusion-exclusion criteria so you know what you're looking for.
For the studies they need help with.
Right. Yeah. I mean, maybe the site doesn't want to give you that because there is some liability involved for the site.
Maybe they'll just say, go get me patients with irritable bowel syndrome.
Exactly. Without giving you any inclusion-exclusion criteria, but you'd prefer to have that.
Okay.
To deliver a quality product to the site. And then you could run some advertising.
Where? We need to get very practical here.
Craigslist.
Run a Craigslist ad. What section?
It's been a while since I've done it.
There's the volunteers. There's also a paid section, like a paid gigs.
Right. It's gigs. That's where
gigs?
It's
paid gigs.
Yep. Paid gigs. That seems to be...
That works better than volunteers. Yeah, I've done both, too.
It works better than anything else there for research.
For research. Okay.
So, yeah, paid gigs.
And how much does Craigslist cost to run an ad on?
Paid gigs is free.
For how much?
Free.
Free?
Yep.
So this person who's recruiting has no risk.
Exactly.
And what do you write on Craigslist? Let's get very practical.
Well, here's where
you... Because now you can get people say, well, I don't have IRB approval.
Right, and you can run into problems here.
I don't want my phone number given out to psychos. Right. I don't want a website. I don't want to put the site's website because then they'll bypass me. There's a whole bunch of objections.
Well, unfortunately, you're going to have to do something, right?
So, yeah, that's what I'm getting at.
So probably you're going to want to put your phone number in.
Get a Google Voice
phone number. Personal phone number. You can, they can respond by email exclusively, so you can go that route.
Yes.
If you want to maintain some anonymity.
Here's another trick. It costs nothing, nothing to create a simple website. True. Nothing. You don't even need a domain name. You go to Wix, get one for free. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing.
Sure. And they can provide your, I assume they can leave their contact information there.
The key theme here is it's a lot of work with no guaranteed returns, which is why no one does
it.
All right. I shouldn't say no one. Very few do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But if you want to get your foot in the door at a research site, and not go the CRA Academy route, because students that do the CRA Academy don't need to go to the patient recruiter. We put them in touch with sites. But if you want to intern at a site, no site's going to take you up as an intern because you're wasting time for them. Then that's, yeah, it's free, but they have, somebody has to spend time training you. So they don't want that. But if you bring them patients, right? Mm-hmm. Craigslist ad. What else? Go to doctor's offices and
Introduce get the yourself. Doctors
interested in referrals.
Yep. So in this case,
set up support groups.
Well, going back to the doctors, you're not to pay referral fees, but you can pay them to review their charts. So
marketing fee, pre-screening fee.
Sure. So, you know, with the individuals that I offered this opportunity to, I told them I would pay them $800 for a qualified patient, right?
Good money.
Sure. These were for more difficult studies. So if you were getting paid, say, $800, you might give half to the doctor that refers the patient.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever you're getting paid, give half to the doctor. You might have to give a little more if you're not getting paid a lot. If you're getting paid $400, you might have to give the doctor $200 or $300, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's one way to do it. And like you said, there's other ways as well. I mean, Facebook ads, Google ads, but those cost money.
Sure. We're trying to give people like the free. Go to Craigslist, post that you're running a support group every week.
Sure.
For patients with whatever. And then actually learn about that condition.
A support group where, though?
You can do meetup. No, you can do meetup. You can meet at a restaurant, Starbucks. You can meet anywhere.
It's still going to be costs associated with that, most likely. Well, if you're doing it at a restaurant, they're going to expect you to buy something.
No, you can go to meetup.com and you can go to like Starbucks. Everyone gets, you get a coffee and then people just join you.
Okay.
You can even put in the ad, buy something, like to eat.
Okay.
Whatever. We've done this for Alzheimer's before at our own clinic. It's worked.
That's a little different. Relatively well. If you don't have your own clinic.
Meetups. Mm-hmm. Or you go to support groups. You don't need to host it.
I've actually done that. I don't like that, but yeah, I've done that.
You can.
Sure.
And you're not supposed to be disrespectful during the meeting and start advertising, but after.
Why I don't like it is because it's difficult to strike up a conversation with people because they're you know, the presenter is always talking.
Well, here's what you do. You go. You sit for the whole thing.
Which is boring as hell, and yes, I did this.
You talk to other people after. And then, oh, by the way, have you heard of clinical research? I'm a recruiter for some sites. There's studies.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to really learn about the disease.
Mm-hmm.
And take a genuine interest in it, which is, again, why it's more difficult. So if you want to go the patient recruitment route, go to a site that does studies that you're interested in. Like, if you like psychiatry, go to a psychiatry site. If you like oncology, go to a cancer clinic.
By the way, just because I don't leave this out there, my least favorite way was going to support groups.
Right.
And I much would prefer to go to doctors' offices and have a conversation with them.
Oh, yeah. But some people are the opposite.
Yeah, sure. So experiment and see what you prefer to do.
Are there other ways? Craigslist, the free ways. Oh, yeah. Go to a medical clinic, print up a bunch of flyers. It's not free, but you can do it at your home. And put them on the windshields of every car. We have a study for this call. Guarantee if you hit up 500 cars, you're going to get one or two calls. Guaranteed. Guaranteed.
Sure.
People don't want to do it. You either do all that work, and it sounds like a lot of work, or you join the CRA Academy. You can bypass all that stuff.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, I agree.
Here's another free way. You go to a clinic. They recruit for, let's say, postpartum depression. Okay? You're interested in that.
Mm-hmm.
You, the person. So you go home and you every day make a video on postpartum depression. And you take the audio from that video and you make it a podcast. And then you take the audio and you write an article about it every day. Within a month or so, you'll start getting leads. And even if you're not getting leads, if you tell the site you're doing this and they like that, they see some kind of competitive advantage in having you do this for them.
Sure.
In exchange, not for paying you, in exchange for allowing you to intern there. I will make these videos for you. I've been doing this for 2 weeks. Here they are. They might be impressed, right?
Sure.
I've been doing this for 2 weeks. I'll continue. I don't even want to get paid. If any patients come in from those, you'll pay me. But I want to, in exchange, learn how to, and start building my CV.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many ways. There's more. If we sit here for another 20 minutes, we'll find five more ways.
I forgot the question.
They want practical examples of how to get started as a patient recruiter.
Okay.
Pretty practical.
Sure.
Pick one. Last one. This has gone on for a while.
Yeah, I see that.
I'm a site manager at a study site with one PI. We recently received an inquiry for a phase 3 study. I wanted to look at the basic info on clinicaltrials.gov before completing the questionnaire. I couldn't find that study. Wondering if pharmaceuticals can start talking to PIs before posting the study on clinicaltrials.gov.
That was all done.
If the answer is yes, which they can, right?
Yeah.
Then I'm wondering if there are studies being dished out that are not listed on clinicaltrials.gov, making the site not so useful for searching for potential studies.
Also, happens all the time.
Now, does that mean clinicaltrials.gov is not so useful for searching for studies?
It's not what it means at all. It just means it's not a list, 100% list of all trials.
Because this person's saying that it's maybe not useful.
No, it's useful. It's
so just, why? Tell them
it,
why.
It just doesn't give you access to every trial out there. But it's better than nothing. You have a source to access a potential study site, study sponsors, right?
Right.
Or not so much CROs, but even then it does. So it does give you access to your source of revenue, right? What did you used to call it?
Dialing for dollars.
There you go. Dialing for dollars. Find some numbers and start calling. Most of the time, not going to produce anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
But every once in a while, it does, right? How many phone calls to get us? Would you say that if you're dialing for dollars?
Well, these days it's emailing for dollars.
Sure, but back in the day when you used to do this,
it was dialing for dollars.
So back in the day when you used to dial for dollars, how many on average? And think about it for 10 seconds before you answer. Would you say you had to dial to get a legitimate lead?
I don't need to think. I've already done the math.
Yeah.
100.
100.
Whether it's calls or emails.
Yeah. 100.
100 contacts.
100 contacts, and you'll have a legitimate possibility for studying.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
So, a day's work.
Yes, and you're right. Good observation about clinicaltrials.gov viewer. Sponsors are required to post their studies, but, you know, no one's really enforcing it. And yes, they can get fined if they don't post the study and then if they don't post the results. But there's kind of like a gray area. First of all, half of the time they don't even post at all. But there is a gray area on when they're supposed to post it. Like, you're supposed to, once you submit the study to the FDA and then you get IRB approval, you're supposed to post it. And you put not yet recruiting. But a lot of sponsors don't do that because they don't want a bunch of sites hitting them up right away. Remember, people, clinicaltrials.gov is not meant for research sites to make your life easier. It's meant for patients and doctors to find studies for their patients.
Mm-hmm.
No one cares about your site in New Jersey and why you're pissed off that you can't find study leads on clinicaltrials.gov.
Yep.
Good. They don't want you to find out.
Yep.
Right? It doesn't mean it's not effective. It's very effective.
Yep.
It's a lot of work. This is related to the patient recruitment question.
Sure.
Work.
Yep.
This podcast can be summed up in one word. Work.
I don't know about the first topic, but yeah.
The CRO or the sites? That first one, a lot of work.
Yeah, there's work, but that wasn't really the conversation or the topic.
Right. Anything else you want to add?
No.
To this random musings from the Clinical Trials Guru? Let me see if I'm getting all the questions.
A very long one. They usually don't run 40 minutes.
Sometimes when I go solo, they do, but or when I interview someone.
Hmm.
Depends. If I go on a rant, this might be a question. No, that's not a question. But yeah, I think that's good. Done?
I'm done.
Take care, everybody. Talk to y'all later. Bye-bye.
So hey, everybody. Thank you very much for listening to another episode of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. Again, if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to this podcast. Make sure you leave a review, if you could be so kind, please. And also go to theclinicaltrialsguru.com if you're interested in learning more about who I am, who some of my guests are. You can have access to some of my YouTube videos. I do a lot of videos about clinical research. So go to theclinicaltrialsguru.com. And you can also call or text me anytime, 949-415-6256. Also follow me on any social media platform. It's Dan Svera. And you can also email me if you'd like, dan@theclinicaltrialsguru.com. Thank you very much.